All right. Hi, welcome to the River Talk podcast, our fun little podcast about rivers and whitewater and kayaking and rafting, that kind of thing. And this is our Christmas week episode. Eric and Priscilla are off celebrating Christmas. So I'm here with my friend Aaron Cavignolo. Welcome back to the show, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Zach. It's fun to be here.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of a slow week in the whitewater world, but do you have any news of the week?
I think the most exciting news of the week is the new Star Wars movie.
I yeah.
Mean, like that's, I mean, that used to be momentous. Like, the world used to be talking about it. And I feel like people are still talking, and I know you're a big Star Wars fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so, I had surgery last week and spent the week basically unable to do anything except watching Star Wars theory videos. So it's definitely hot on my mind right now.
Nice. So, Zach.
Wow.
What, you know, you're a raft company owner. Uh-huh. If you were to choose one person from the original cast to be a river guide, who do you think is the best river guide in that group?
All right, so you asked me this the other day, and I've had time to think about it. And so it's not what you would think the answer is. I think the first answer I had immediately was Princess Leia. I mean, there's a few reasons. I think that women make amazing river guides. And I feel like the best guides I know right now are mostly female. So that's a factor. You know, and Leia is just, she's a leader. Obviously, she led the rebellion. You know, she's attractive, which is an important part of being a river guide. Like, charisma is important. So, you know, she brings a lot to the table in terms of being a guide. But that's not my full answer. I want to hear what you have to think first.
Well, I think Leia is a great option, and I think, like, as a raft company owner, Leia would probably be my first choice.
Uh-huh.
I'm really into the idea of Chewbacca, though.
That's ridiculous. He can't talk.
Yeah, but you know what? I feel like there's a lot of guides that people can't understand. They still love them.
Okay.
They still love the guides, and like, I mean, he's a character, and people like characters on the river. You know, he's not just another ordinary random person.
Han Solo is a character. Chewbacca is not a character. Chewbacca is a blanket.
Han Solo, though, Han Solo would be getting into so much trouble. He would just be trouble.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But he is a character. I mean, there are those guides who, you know, they're kind of wild and people love them and they're characters. They also do cause problems. Yeah. So I hear you there. And I'm you got me thinking about this when you brought this up last week. Luke is a great option too. I mean, Luke is, you know, kind of nerdy. He's not going to get into trouble. You know, those nerdy people are actually amazing guides. They don't get all the attention, but they have better one-on-one conversations with people. They take their job seriously. So I thought about this a little bit. And when we're talking about river guides, you're just talking about the original people. Like, this is between Luke, Leia, Chewbacca, and Solo, right? You're not including anybody else.
I think Obi-Wan has to be in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Obi-Wan would be an amazing guide, right? Like, he's like he would be like Old Man River. He's seen everything. He's experienced. You know, he would definitely be. He probably would be the best.
You know what? I would say if you took that group of characters and put them together, that would be an amazing crew.
So that's where I was headed. Was like, it's not about who is the best individual guide. It's about the team. And
yeah.
So like, I like the fact that within that team, there's just diversity of personalities, of people having different abilities, and together they're amazing. If you had five Princess Leias, that probably wouldn't go very well, right? Like, who, you know,
no.
If you had five Chewbaccas, nobody could talk to the guests. You know, if you had five Han Solos, it would be an utter disaster, right? There's not one of those people is the ultimate one river guide. I would say, I mean, probably if you had five Obi-Wans, you'd probably have a great trip, right? But I think putting the team of them together, the five of them together, is better than five of the best of them together.
Now, what about 3CPO?
He's useless. He's not even a human. Yeah.
Man, you're so against the machines. You better watch out, Zach. The machines are hearing this, and they're going to remember this when they take over.
That's a good point. Yeah, but I mean, C-3PO, I mean, he can't. An important part of being a guide is lifting heavy things. I don't think C-3PO can touch his toes.
Well, I think there's certain guides we've seen on the river that would fit into this into his mold, but they're definitely not desirable to work with.
Yeah,
So,
and
yeah,
that's
that's
where,
a good point.
Chewie would be really good lifting heavy things. That's a good point. You always kind of need somebody who's just strong, like
Yeah.
one person who you're like, hey, you go lift that heavy thing over there. And so Chewie would be that person. He's kind of like Kevy, like, hey, Kevy, go do that rad thing. Kevy's a friend of ours. We need, hey, Kevin,
Yeah.
go climb the mountain because on top there might be a view. We need to know. And he'll run up the mountain as fast as he can. You kind of need that person who can just be super strong and burly.
Well, I was, yeah, totally. Going back to the dome head there, 3CPO, he might be a good shuttle driver.
Sure. Yeah. He'd be a good translator.
He just talks a lot, just talks, 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 talks.
Yep.
It's a little bit like anal, like making sure everything's happening at the right time, getting people where they need to go. He could be a good, he might have a role there.
I don't think he should talk to people though. He's awkward. I would let him be the food buyer. I think R2D2's the shuttle driver. Because R2D2 is lovable, has experience operating machines. You definitely want the first priority of a shuttle driver to be good at driving, and I think that's R2D2.
Yeah, he's not very risk adverse. The people might be in for a wild ride to put in.
With R2D2?
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely want somebody who is afraid of risk. That's the big priority. But so I thinking about this, if I was to guess which of these characters I think I'm like as a guide, I want to be like Han Solo, but I'm probably more like I'm probably more like Luke Skywalker. Like kind of nerdy, trying really hard, not the center of attention, but I can be sometimes. I'm probably a Luke Skywalker. Who would you be? Do you agree? You can tell me if you disagree. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Oh, you're
Who would you
such a
be?
Han Solo through and through, Zach. Oh my gosh.
I want to be a Han
I'll
Solo.
say this. You used to be a Han Solo.
Yeah,
I will
okay.
say that. You definitely used to be a Han Solo. A little less, but I think you're more going into the Obi-Wan area.
That's.
You've got wisdom now, you've got more patience now, you don't need to be the center of attention. You do what needs to be done,
Well,
and you
that's.
understand what needs to be done, and you understand what's important.
Yeah, well, that's nice to hear. That's my goal. My goal would be to be an Obi-Wan for sure.
Well, and I would say that's my goal is to be that. I would say, I mean, honestly, I think I'm more of a Leia.
Okay.
Like, in charge, get shit done, like take care of it, good with the people, like that. I think that's more where I am. I want to be
You're a good
Obi-Wan.
looker. You got a good looking.
Yeah, and I'm attractive. I'm pleasing to the eyes. Yes,
Pleasing to the eye. That's what
exactly.
it is. Yeah. All right.
Yes.
That
Yeah,
makes
exactly.
sense. Yeah. And like I said, it takes a team of diverse people with different abilities. And you and I work really well together. I don't think we're exactly the same. We complement each other really well when we guide. So it would make sense we're not the same.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you want the party.
I had this
What?
theory about guiding, and I feel like when I talk to you, we talk more about commercial guiding, and I think it's, but this theory about guiding where there's like 15 skills to being a river guide. Have I told you this theory before? I'm not.
I don't remember, so please go ahead.
So I think there's like 15 skills. I don't have them written down. Let's say the 15 skills are like paddle boat guiding and cooking and like rescue is one of them and telling stories is one of them. Playing music is one of them. There's 15. And no one guide is good at all 15. Like most guides are good at five. The best guides in the world are maybe good at seven, but really good at those seven things. But really, nobody's good at all 15. But your goal in putting a crew of guides together is making sure that all 15 skills are met with a high level among the guide crew. But to expect
Yeah.
any one person to be like a master of all 15 things is insane. And you wouldn't want a bunch of people who are masters of everything together because they would just kind of bicker the whole time. And I guess you'd want 15 perfect people, but it's kind of unrealistic. And so the goal is to find like a crew of people who match, who all fit those different skills.
Yeah, totally.
So
Yeah.
I think
No,
about that
that
a
makes
lot.
I like the way you put that.
Yeah. So, well, cool. Good news of the week. Hey, the other news of the week that kind of came out last week was that Pelican bought Dagger, or bought Confluence, which is basically Dagger. And it's not Pelican, the company Pelican Box. There's some Canadian that makes Pelican boxes. There's some Canadian conglomerate called Pelican International that makes kayaks, and they bought Confluence, which owns Dagger and Wavesport and Perception and a bunch of whitewater brands. They were based, I think, in North Carolina, and now it's part of a Canadian company.
So, do you think where they're going to keep making whitewater boats?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I assume so. I mean, they bought it. I mean, Confluence is mainly a whitewater company. I mean, maybe that's not right, but they do a lot of whitewater stuff, so I think they have to. So it's just interesting seeing these
That
brands that start off just doing whitewater getting bought up by corporations and more corporations. And I
Yeah, it's
asked,
interesting.
yeah, and you know, Jax Eric Jackson just left Jackson Kayak. He's not the president anymore. And they switched Jackson Kayak is now Jackson Adventures. So it's a new brand. It's not even Jackson Kayak anymore to encompass all the stuff they do, the coolers, and I think they make dog kennels, and they're doing a lot of recreation boats. So Jackson's going through a big reorganization too.
Wow.
Yeah. So
It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. Yeah, those are interesting news of the week.
yeah, I just remembered that. Well, hey, I wanted to get on to this week's topic, which we brought up in an episode a while ago, and somebody sent us an email about this as a follow-up. And it's the idea of, we're always taught to take a rescue class or take a swiftwater rescue class. You know, when you get to a certain level, everybody's like, go take a swiftwater class, as in that's how you're going to be safer. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that maybe swiftwater rescue classes aren't the right solution to being safer. It like they teach a skill set that is, you know, either the ACA, the American Canoe Association, or Rescue 3 have developed as rescue skill sets, and they teach you how to rescue people, but they're not teaching safety. And shouldn't the goal of shouldn't boaters learn focus more on safety than rescue? That's the question. What do you think, Aaron? I mean, do you
Okay.
think do you, do
So you're are you saying are you when you're saying safety instead of rescue, are you kind of saying prevention?
Yeah, prevention. Like, hey, let's focus on how to be safe on the river more than how to do a rescue once something's gone wrong. And like I said, people are always like, hey, once you get to a certain level, like you're doing class three and want to do harder rivers, everybody's like, hey, go take a rescue class. And I'm thinking maybe that's the wrong answer. Maybe that there's a different class that isn't offered that's more focused on, hey, how to be safe on the river.
Are you talking for private or commercial?
Mainly private. But I mean, for commercial too. I mean, for commercial, you kind of have to learn how to do rescues because you're responsible for people. So that makes sense. But I feel like even commercial, you should focus first on how to avoid accidents. And so maybe there's an intermediary class for guides that's safety before rescue. But definitely private. You know, I think private boaters, there's a lot to learn about safety that maybe guides learn on the job as part of their training anyway, that private boaters don't learn.
Well, and I think that's a key point, is I feel like being part of a professional rafting company, you have that knowledge base that stays there, that's passed along and built upon over the years. And so you do have that I think safety is a big part of just it's just ingrained in everything we do on commercial trips. And the private trips, there's just so many details that you watch the way people do things on private trips. You're like, yeah, you do that a lot of times like that, you're gonna get hurt. And on a commercial trip, like, you know, a guide's doing that's new, the senior guide's going to get on to that person and be like, hey, that can't do that like that. Like, you'll get hurt if you do that. And I think that's one of the reasons they're, you know, for the number of people who go private boating versus commercial boating, from what I've seen, it seems like there's way more injuries and there's way more like fatalities on private trips than on commercial trips.
So I guess I am
And it's,
talking more private users, and because we do a lot of instruction for private users, so I get this a lot. People, you know, like, hey, What do I need to do next for safety? People ask me that a lot, and I'm like, I guess take a saltwater rescue class. But I know when you go to take a class, it's like 3 days of tying knots that you won't practice, learning how to do some complicated rope systems that you won't practice, that you'll have seen once and used, but 3 years later, if you need to use it in the field, you won't be able to get it back because you don't use it very much. Whereas maybe that go ahead, Aaron.
Sorry.
I mean, maybe that time is better used to go towards like, hey, here's how we avoid accidents.
Well, I think you have a good point there. Like pulling back the layers on this, I think that one of the first issues is you take a swift water rescue class, and most of them are designed for fire, for like emergency EMS people and boaters, which is just silly.
Yeah.
Because you're going to approach the situation totally different. It's a totally different situation. And like having taken those courses, like while I enjoy them and it's fun interacting with the fire and those people, it's just like, man, you guys, like, you know, like it'd be like a firefighter and me taking a class on what to do with a burning building.
Yeah.
It's just kind of silly, right? Like they know so much more about fire. They spend their time around it all the time. While we on the river, we spend our time on the wall, and our comfort and our skills are totally different than theirs. Our equipment, everything we have is totally different. So I feel like I agree with you. I think that the courses, particularly for the privates, and I think also for the commercial guides, need to be changed. And you like a safety class, as you say, I think people love like the tricks and the cool things,
mm-hmm.
but the cool things isn't what you remember. You know, you remember the basics, the fundamentals. And that's one of the things I really liked about the first wilderness first responder course I took from Bobby Deary. Did you take one from Bobby Deary?
I took a 2-day wilderness first aid, but not a full first responder class from him.
Okay.
But yeah, he's amazing.
Course,
yeah.
The amazing instructor. And what I really liked about that course is that course was set up to give you like the basic knowledge to handle situations, how to mm-hmm. gather information, some basic structure. And it wasn't like memorizing a lot of details, but it gave you the confidence going forward. Like you kind of knew what to do after that.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay. You know, and I feel like you're right with the safety stuff on the river and the swift water. I'll say when we're teaching guide schools, even commercial guide schools, I'm very aware of that. And I feel like having seen so many people try to set up systems and not be able to set them up and not do them, and I know they're not going to be practicing them the way they should be practicing them to be able to pull them out and successfully use them and have the knowledge to apply them in the way that people aren't going to get hurt. It's better to keep stuff simple. And that's why I'm a big fan of deflating tubes on a boat, because it's like, yeah, they're not loading up systems and stuff's not going to go flying. And I think keeping stuff simple like that, where it's like, hey, and some basic rules, like don't deflate the tubes underneath the water, you know, because those are, you know, if a boat wraps or something like that.
But I think, Aaron, like right now you're on rescue still. I think there's like stuff before rescue. I think a lot of times when we think about saltwater rescue, everybody thinks about a wrap. Like they're like, oh, I'm going to go take a saltwater rescue class so I can learn how to fix a wrap. When like that's equipment recovery and nobody's life is in danger.
Totally.
But there's things that we could be teaching. Like one thing is, it's literally saying when it's just equipment recovery, don't put anybody's lives in danger no matter what. But when it's like just equipment recovery, like just chill, right? That's a good place to start. You know, like set people's frame of mind correctly, because I notice when it's, you know, when we're chasing down somebody's kayak who swam, or there's a wrap, everybody gets stressed out and that's caused worse problems. I was actually, my friend swam this summer and I went to chase his kayak down, and another kayaker decided to help me, and he went into a rapid trying to get attached to his kayak and took his own paddle to his face and broke his tooth. And he was so amped up to do a rescue, and it was just a kayak, and he broke his tooth and his face was all bloody. You know, I just feel like we see a lot of that. And I'm like, dude, this is an equipment recovery. Like the guy's fine. Like we don't need to be stressing out about this.
Yeah, totally agree. And I'll going back to that point about the wrap is, I think what my thought with that is that spend a lot less time on that material. Like, don't go into, you know, just like, and then, and like cover it like that. And just be like, okay, we'll talk about that a little bit, give you a little bit. And then you can spend a lot more time focused on the stuff that they're going to, the information they're going to retain and they're going to be able to use. And Zach, I think a lot of it needs to be in the water practice.
Yeah.
Of when you end up in the water, what do you do?
Yeah.
For self-rescue, that type of safety to understand the force of the river and have more respect for it. I think people would be much more likely to wear a life jacket if they swam a bunch of big rapids with one on and be like, dude, I could not imagine swimming one without one. You know, doing stuff like of that nature, I think it's crucial. And I mean, I think you could just have like a safety class too. That's more watered down. Definitely. I mean, I think we're in agreement. It's just a question of what you cover and how much time you spend on what material. And then it's really depend on what people are doing and who's this class designed for.
I mean, I think it's designed for the boater who's like getting into class 3, maybe class 4. And, you know, I think that I I'm trying to get your opinions on what it would be, but I really feel like stressing. I'm at the point where safety comes down to like wear your life jacket, don't drink, wear clothing appropriate to the temperatures, and when you swim, get your feet up. I feel like those things are probably like, I'm just guessing, 70% of safety. And then beyond that, it's like when you go boating, like if it's cold, that's a huge danger factor. If the river's high, that's like when not to go, basically. Like, say, like, when do people not go? And then also how to set proper safety for your friends and look out for each other.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny is we you know, you mentioned we were going to talk about this, and I pretty much wrote down the same list.
Yeah.
You know, properly tightened PFD, no alcohol. And then for me, mine was a lot shorter, like those two, and then deciding what are the appropriate conditions to be out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weather flows. I feel like the appropriate conditions is huge. Like, wear your life jacket, don't drink alcohol. And then after that, don't go out there at the wrong time. Yeah. Like don't stand up in the river for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's, the foot entrapment thing is definite, but does like making it, that's where I feel like most private boaters have gotten in trouble that I've seen is like, it's with the conditions and they've done before, but the water's higher, it's colder. There's a variable that's changed and they decide to go anyways or decide to continue. And it seems like that's one problem.
So I think us just talking about it and people listening to the podcast can be like, oh, cool. This is reinforcing the behaviors that we think are important for safety. But like, does this warrant like a 1-day class? Like, would it make sense to offer like a 1-day safety class to I'm not going to call them private boaters. I'm just a boater. It's just people that boat. So they can like, we can reinforce the most important things for safety, which are those things. But then maybe what else would, if, you know, we could cover all that stuff in a couple hours and like dive into statistics even, be like, hey, here's why you need to wear a PFD. Here's where most fatalities come from. It turns out a lot of fatalities come from cold weather shock. So having mm-hmm. proper attire for the temperature of the water and going into some of the data behind that. But like, if you had half a day to cover other safety things, what would those things be?
Well, I mean, before we jump out forward to that, I mean, what you've discussed right there, I feel like you could almost just have an online course for a lot of that material.
You could, you could. Like, that's a good point.
Just to provide it and have it out there. And
that's an interesting
idea.
Even
the Boating and Waterways Group has made some videos over the years about like, where are your PFD? Don't drink alcohol. You know, I think those videos actually exist too. You know, to be honest, like I think I've seen them. Mm-hmm. So I think there's this, the part that you don't need to go out and practice skills. And I think having an online video series about it would be fantastic. It's just something for people to watch and hear some good things, keep yourself safe on the river. You know, it's kind of like the safety talk we do on commercial trips.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much. I mean, you think about the safety talk we give on commercial trips. It covers a lot of this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does. And, you know, my safety talk historically has been, you know, a 15 to 20 minute, you know, thing I've given whatever 50, 100 times I give it a lot. I have it down to a science. I have jokes. I have pauses for my jokes. I talk about Iron Man sometimes. I've had my talk of them forever. That's incredibly thorough. That goes down to like, don't go chasing rattlesnakes and, things like that. Well, you and I took the IRF course last spring, and Mark was like, "Hey, you got to get this down to 10 minutes, and here's the things you need to cover." And that list was way shorter, and it's actually caused me to shorten my list. And the reason to make a shorter safety talk is that a lot of stuff we talk about in safety talks, like, aren't that important actually, but there's a handful of things that are critical, and if your talk is too long and you lose people, then they don't listen to any of it, or it's just too much information, So if you can just really focus, I mean, for me now it's like focus on getting your feet up when you swim, avoiding foot entrapments, getting back to the boat, wearing the proper equipment. Even just that stuff is, if you told guests that's most of safety. What to do when the boat flips, it's kind of nice to tell them to like breathe under the take a breath under the boat, but that's kind of obvious too.
Yeah, the gain. I feel like almost the gain out from underneath the boat is yeah, more important with that part. Yeah.
So like I so I'm learning that like historically we've covered so many things in our safety talks, because like every time something goes wrong, like, okay, from now on we're always going to cover this one thing that happens once every 10 years. But there really is a core amount of information for safety that is like 90 to, a huge percentage of safety. And Aaron, I'm just
Yeah.
saying things to get your feedback, because I want you to say, yeah, hell yeah, that's
Yeah,
right.
I mean, I think that's an important aspect of safety talks, and I think being a teacher just in general, like it's a teaching situation. And when you're teaching, as we both have done a lot of teaching, Zach, is what you don't say is almost more important than what you do say. You know what I mean? Like limiting the amount of information you're passing along. And I'll say with the safety talk, one of my big problems with the safety talk is I think there's a lot of stuff that you don't need to do in the safety talk. You don't need to talk, don't talk about your life jacket in the safety talk. Talk about it when you're getting them all their life jackets. And then don't
I mean
talk
that.
about paddling in the safety talk. Talk about it separately when you get down to the rafts. And then that makes that safety talk much more consolidated. And you're just removing stuff from it that you don't need in there. Anything you don't need to talk about there that can be discussed someplace else, discuss it where that other place. And like you said, like the rattlesnake thing, like maybe depending on your trip, maybe when you pull up at lunch, that's when you talk about that stuff. You're like, okay, get everyone together at lunch. And then that stuff isn't covered there too. Like all those little things that you as much as you can cut it down. Now that being said, having worked some places where having a thorough safety talk is really critical. Like I've seen all that stuff help people and people do listen. I think if it's said in a concise manner and people aren't getting long-winded and talking on and on and telling these long stories, it's precise with good pausing at the right spots to emphasize key aspects and to really recognize what are those key aspects.
Yeah, I think I'm getting pretty good at safety talks where I'm reading the people now. Like sometimes I can tell they're impatient and ready to go. Sometimes I can tell they're liking my jokes and I'm going to keep telling them jokes because I know they're paying attention. Sometimes I know the crew needs another 20 minutes before they're ready to go, and I have to entertain the group. Where other times I'm like, oh man, the water's rising, dropping, doing, we need to get going quickly because of some other issue. So I've learned to read the group, but I think that the safety talk idea has to, and I've done a lot of them, and so I feel like I'm good at them. But I feel like we have to assume a second-year guide who's nervous giving the talk. So we need to make sure they cover these eight things.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the problem, though, Zach, is having a second year guide giving a safety talk when they're
Or
just not
they're
that comfortable with the material to begin with,
yeah, but
you
you're always
know?
oh, your first everybody's first safety talk is always going to be uncomfortable, or everybody has to learn somewhere. But I think we're getting off topic, and the topic I really want to cover
Totally.
is like assuming that we can teach everybody, like, don't drink, wear your PFD, dress for the conditions, get your feet up when you swim. And we can convince everybody that those are critical to safety. What are the next few things we could teach in 4 to 6 hours that would help the general safety of boaters? Like, is this a worthwhile half a day, three quarters of a day? Is there things we could get across with the water that would be effective for teaching safety? And what would those things be?
Yeah,
Would you bring up throw bags? Would you show people how to use throw bags?
No.
How come?
I wouldn't. I think anything that needs to be practiced a bunch, I wouldn't include in there.
So how?
I think if you're gonna differentiate a swift water class from a safety class, I think a swift water class has skills that you need to practice. And a safety class is just basic safety.
So I mean, don't you think that everybody should know how to use a throw bag though?
Yeah, but you're not by practicing for an hour, you're not going to learn how to use a throw bag.
So how long do you?
You need to practice it a bunch.
So how long does this? I feel like this class has to include throw bags because I want everybody to know how to safely use a throw bag, right? How long does the class need to be to get through throw bags? Can you do all this in a day, or is this now a 2 day class?
Well, I mean, you can introduce the whole throw bag thing. No, I guess I have a different vision on the class. And like, Zach, how many times have you used a throw bag?
A lot. I mean, quite a bit. I
In
mean,
class
I.
three, in class, in class three, four water.
Yeah, I mean, I boat a lot, so I mean, I'm regularly using them. Maybe not to like
But
pull,
in class.
sw maybe not to pull swimmers in, but a boat is stuck on a rock, and we throw a bag out to pull it off, or for
And then
things that you don't
that.
expect.
Yeah, but those are all conditions that are like static conditions, I'll say, where kind of going back to your talk about not going in depth about wraps, those aren't like life critical safety stuff.
But they could be. I mean, but don't you think that being able to use a throw bag is an important skill? Or are you saying, nah, just don't have people not use them, they're fine.
I would put being able to. Like having swam underneath the raft and gotten yourself out from underneath the raft would be more important. I think pulling yourself back into the raft would be a more important skill to introduce. I think swimming rapids would be more important as well. I even think, working on with a raft, picking up swimmers from your boat is a more, I mean, those are things that you do all the time. And they're challenging. And the throwback, I mean, maybe it'd just be like, if just give that. Who was the guy who did this? The throwback talk at our IRF class. I don't remember his name. This is a great talk. Our friend
Was
from
it?
Ecuador.
Oh, Santiago.
Yeah, Santiago. Yeah, Santiago said, if you want to have friends, be good with your throw bag, because you're good with your throw bag for your friends, and it takes practicing on your own. I mean, it takes a lot of practice, and I think that's what it comes down to. Throwbacks. It's like throwbacks. I might just. Take a throw bag out and have everyone throw it once and put it away. And like, we're not practicing anymore here because that's not going to be enough. I might do
Well,
it like that
but how
and
long
be
does
like, that's the technique.
so I
And
feel like this is important to be able, I think it's important to people know how to use throw bags. So
totally. So introduce it, but I'd almost do it that way just to make a point of like, you cannot get good enough at a throw bag in this class. You
yeah.
have to practice it at home,
But you have
right?
to introduce the skill so people can practice it
Yeah, I'm
and talk
actually
about
now that
some
I
of
think
the
about it, that's what I
dangers.
would do. I just introduce it, have everyone throw in once or something like that, and just be like, yeah, okay, you know how to throw a throw bag.
Yeah. And
Great. But then you
so
know what, Zach? I feel like so many people screw up and throw bags when they shouldn't, and they make situations worse.
and that's where I
And
think
I feel like throw bags are almost like Z rigs.
that's where I think talking of this class is important, is so that like we this is helping me flush through what goes in it. Like maybe we talk about the dangers of throw bags, like you shouldn't throw them from a boat. Like if you're in a raft, you shouldn't throw a throw bag from the raft, right? And I know everybody's gonna give me an example of the one time that they did it and they saved somebody's life. But like, people have died the same way. So like, I think it's generally accepted to, if you're in a boat, just you'll get the person, don't throw a rope. And so I think teaching things like that and explaining the dangers of ropes, like to preface throw bags would help with that a little bit too. Like in
Yeah, I mean,
my,
I'm not against it. I'm just like the throwback thing. I feel like people get hung up on the gear stuff, and I feel like a safety class shouldn't be about gear. minus your life jacket.
So,
but other, and what you're wearing to keep your body warm if you take a swim, dressing to swim, and you know, having proper footwear, that stuff on you. The throw bag, for me, it's like, I don't know why, but it's secondary. And I just see so many people do stupid stuff with throw bags. It's just like, ah, man.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I agree, but I also think – I agree, but they're also pretty, I think, critical. Like, there's just so many times you need them. They're like the one tool that is actually super useful for a lot of things. And it's not always – I always think of a throw bag as like getting a swimmer out of the river. But, I mean, there's a million – like using them to line boats around rapids. You know, using them.
Oh, yeah. And that,
you know, so yeah. I think having an understanding of. What was that?
You there? I was going to say, yeah, I use them all the time to line boats around rapids, but that's a whole different skill set. That's not throwing a throw bag. And then you're, learning to line a boat. That's a major skill, and that's a major difference.
Yeah.
So I don't even.
But you'll never be able to line a boat if you don't never learn how to use a throw bag. Like at some point you have to know like the basics of a throw bag. And sometimes when you line a boat, somebody has the boat, you're standing somewhere else, you throw them the bag, the person ties it on, then they line it. So I think to advance. Let's go back. I would say the top end of this course would be proper use of a throw bag. Like it's everything from like wear your PFD to use a throw bag. So what's in between? What are the other like safety things that need to be covered in between the basics to correctly use a throw bag? Because the course, this is a course I'm thinking about offering because I'm getting a lot of people asking me, what do I do for safety? What's the next step? How do I become a safer boater? And my answer has lately been take a swiftwater rescue class. But people come back to me like, that's cool. I learned how to like tie all these crazy knots and systems, but it didn't make me feel like I'm safer. It just felt like I could help be a team member on a rescue. So what are the things to make people safer boaters up through throwing a throw bag?
Let's talk about the basics of what you like we're talking about people guiding a raft right now. Let's just say a private boat, commercial boat, whatever.
Yep.
Basic expectations. You need to be able to pull yourself back in the boat and have a way to pull yourself back in the boat.
Yep.
You need to be able to flip your boat back over if it's upside down.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it. Right? Like, I think those are too huge. You need to be able to pick up swimmers. If somebody falls out of a boat other than your boat or even out of your boat, you need to be able to go get them.
Yep.
And get them so they don't take a long swim. And you need to know how to, I think those are some basics. And then if you fall in the water, you need to be able to self-rescue back to your raft and you need to be able to self-rescue to shore.
Yep. Those are good. I just thought of one more and I forgot what it was. But while I think of it, I want to go back to getting yourself back in the boat. I teach these raft flipping things every February for the Oregon Whitewater Association. We go to a pool and teach raft flipping. And I find that most private boaters can't get themselves back in the boat. And there's a lot of people that can't get back in a boat that want to go run class four. You know, what's the answer for that?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Zach, I think there is ways like if you put a line across your thwart, it makes it way easier to get back in the boat.
Okay.
You know, and I was just reading a thing today that by 2030, like, a ridiculous percentage of our population is going to be morbidly obese. So, I mean, it's not going away either, this problem. But
it's not always weight issue. It's just getting older. People, as you get older, you lose strength. Like, you know, I'm 46. I can still get myself back in a boat. But I know, like, it's getting harder every year to get back in a boat. And I know there's going to be a day when I can't do it. Is that a mandatory thing for safety?
I think depending on the river you're running, if you're running certain class four stuff, if you're a lead boat on a class four river, I think for sure.
So what if you're not a lead boat? What if you're in the middle? What if you're like in the middle of the pack? Is it okay?
I think that's really depending on the group you're going with, and you need to talk with them. And that's a put in conversation saying, hey, I cannot get back in my boat by myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. Have you tried using those little ladder things even work?
Sort of. I mean, so I've been hammering this with people. You know, I teach that flipping class. I'm like, hey, just so you know, like they ask me, hey, what if I can't get back in? I'm like, you probably shouldn't be running class 4, or maybe not even class 3. And you need to be going out there with people who can rescue you when you fall out, because you can't self-rescue. That's the topic that I have. And then we teach our class 4 rowing schools, and there's people in those classes that can't get back in the boat. And but they also want to progress. They're like, oh man, I want to go run the Illinois, and I want to go do this and that. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but like, there's a physical fitness aspect to this that there's a that you need to somehow solve self-rescuing before you should go and do these things, or you need to go with people who are like will rescue you, right? Like, they just have your back. You can't go like, there can't be five of you that all have class 4 skills, but you can't rescue each other. That doesn't work. Like, that is a class 4 skill. I know that you can physically run the rapid. You have the skills to run the rapid, but you don't have the skills to safely run the rapid because you can't self-rescue. I have this talk a lot. Have you seen the quick ladders, these aluminum things that pop down?
No.
There's they're called like easy ladders or something that somebody makes in Colorado, I think. And they attach to your frame, and you unclip them, and they kind of come down at an angle, and you can walk up like a metal ladder. That might be a solution. I've never tried those. And there's a new one I saw
Now
that's like, what was that, Aaron?
what about a cataract? I mean, aren't cataracts easier to get into?
They are, but people, I mean, as you get older and out of shape, they're still hard to get into. They're easier for sure because you can climb up the middle, but it's still not easy.
That sounds like that's what we need is some sort of engineered option. I
So
mean,
I think the thing you teach in the class, I mean, this is a good debate for me to have with you, and I think for people maybe to listen to. If you can't get yourself back in the boat, you need to be supported by people that can get you back in your boat. Because it's
I
gonna
think
happen.
I. Zach, I think I think about backcountry skiing. And there's a lot of people who like to go backcountry skiing, but a lot of them don't have the skills to do it on their own. So they hire a guide to take them. And I think that's one of the struggles with our industry, the way it's set up, is you can't just hire a guide to lead you down. Like, you know what I mean? Like the Illinois. Like, they can't just be like, hey, Zach or Aaron, I want to pay you to come lead us down the Illinois River and we're going to take our own rafts. It's like the industry's not set up for that. And I think that's tragic,
Well, I
you
mean,
know, is that is that is
the Forest Service isn't set up for that. The industry could be, but the Forest Service, the way the permits are done, it's not set up to
yeah.
hire one guy to take you down. But you know, I've done it a few times where people have hired us to guide them on the Illinois. Like, they row their own boat and we're on one of our trips, and it's really rewarding for us to see that happen. But I have to charge a lot of money for it because I have to hire a
Yeah, no,
guide
it's
assigned to that person, right? So that not only do they have to pay for their spot on the trip, but they have to pay a guide to be assigned to them for the trip, and it affects the rest of the trip. So, you know, since then I've had five or six people ask me to guide them down the Illinois, and I go, hey, just so you know, it's a few thousand dollars, and I'm not even sure it's safe. So they're like, well, I don't really want to do that. So you're right. There's no easy way to be guided down the Illinois, for example. That one's tough. That one's tough. And a lot of people want to see the Illinois. They want to row the Illinois, but they need somebody there to, if they fall out, to help them get back in their boat, or to show them the
No,
lines, or help them flip the rope back over.
yeah, that's I think that's the that's it seems to me that's almost the problem that needs to be solved there in some ways. You know, is giving space for that within the Forest Service permitting system. I feel like that's in my mind, that's this big area that there's a demand. You know, people want to do that. People want to go take a raft down the Tuolumne, but they're not comfortable doing it on their own. And I think it could be done way much, and some people who are doing it now could be doing it much more safely with someone helping them. So,
The Tuolumne is a great example. I mean, you could learn a lot if you spent like a week just doing like 3 2-day trips with a guide, you know, going out and just every day practicing there. You could get a lot better. So I remember the thing I thought I forgot earlier was I feel like a big part of safety that isn't talked about is like looking out for other boaters, like proper boats, boat spacing, you know, looking back regularly to check on people below big rapids, eddying out and waiting for everybody. I did a trip this spring on a river here in Oregon. There were like 10 catboats and, you know, half of them were drinking in the morning. Half of them, their life jackets were like not adequate for their size. I was, you know, like, okay, I'm basically like kind of out here on my own. Like I have accepted that I'm the one looking out for my own safety. And, you know, after Big Rapids, they weren't waiting for us really. They just, you know, like you'd go through a big rapid and the next boat would be way ahead. So if you'd fallen out, you know, it would have been a mess. And the biggest rapid, which was the most dangerous one, you know, we ran it, nobody had waited for us after that rapid. And then I sat into eddy and waited for everybody else. And just, they just kept blowing through, like nobody waited for each other. And so it's amazing to me that people are boating class four rivers, you know, and first of all, like drinking and not wearing appropriate PFDs, but then the idea of setting safety for each other is like a lost art. And so I think that would be a big thing I would cover is like how to set safety. And teaching that would be hard. You know, we could do it with a whiteboard in a classroom, but we have to go on the river. And, you know, that's our class four school I mentioned earlier. We do a ton of that. Like it's all about team boating, setting safety, boat order. But I think introducing it in this class would be, you know, a good thing. Like it's your job to look out for each other and, you know, think about what happens if somebody falls out.
No, that I like that, Zach. I mean, once again, and these are things just that, like they're just almost. I don't want to say automatic on commercial trips, but are generally, you know, just that's part of the deal. You're doing a high water trip someplace. You're going to have that conversation to put in, and there's just that knowledge base there that isn't there for private boaters. And so it seems like it's a lot of like best practices almost. It's almost a best practices class. Where you're just discussing best practices for like how to what are the best practices for running, you know, whatever, a rocky pool drop river in a group, you know, and what's the best practices at high water for running a river, you know, when the water's higher or there's not eddies and just breaking that stuff down. I think, best practices is really something that's missing from, I think both of us love private boating and we like commercial boating. And luckily we've done a lot of commercial boating over the years to give us the background, those skills and that knowledge base. And, you know, and I think we're both really excited when people private boat and we want to see people get out and run rivers. We also want to see them do it safely.
Yeah.
And this sounds like a great idea for a course.
And I learned this stuff, commercial boating, but I also learned a lot of it, like making mistakes, like, somebody swam for a mile and afterwards like, okay, what, how'd that happen? And like, oh, well, cause we weren't tight enough as a group, or, you know, somebody held onto a boat forever, but we couldn't get back in the boat. Like, okay, well, obviously guides need to be more physically fit or, you know, whatever. Like a lot of these things I've learned the hard way. And now once they happen to you once, you're just like all the time on the lookout for them. But it'd be nice to
help. And then,
pass some of these things on.
Yeah. And Zach, I would say, like, most of those things happen to you one at a time too. If you have a couple, two or three of those things happen at once, that's when things go really bad.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what I feel like in general, really what we're trying to prevent is that type of thing where the things escalate and things build on each other. Somebody falls out, then everyone leans over, try to rescue them. They're not paying attention. Then they go into a hole and flip. No one can rescue themselves. So the boat's floating upside down. And, how many times have we seen that?
So let me verbalize what this class might be. And it's on my desk, like a to-do thing, create this course. That's why it's fun to talk to you about it. I need to create this course because I have, you know, I think it's important. I don't have time to create this course right now, so I would love for somebody else to do it. So like if somebody out there is a swiftwater rescue teacher and they're like, oh, cool idea, I should do that, do it. And I will send people to you. But in lieu of this class, my goal is to maybe offer one this spring or maybe 2021. So let me verbalize back to you what I've taken from this. So there's a the stage one is just iterate with data, the importance of wearing I'll call it PPE, personal protective equipment, which is like helmet, life jacket, shoes, and proper dress. So like show why it's so important to wear personal protective equipment, and then talk about the danger of foot entrapments and how to avoid foot entrapments. I think that's whoa, is that a car at your house?
Oh yeah, we live near a big road.
Okay.
The I'll just say moped. There's a new law actually that just got passed about the mopeds here. They run their mopeds kind of like Harleys. They take off the mufflers and make them crazy loud.
Oh,
It's pretty
cool.
funny.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really neat.
I have a moped that is not loud. So go just to reiterate that again, like so step one is like wear proper protective equipment and how to avoid foot entrapments. I think that is like huge.
Would you also include strainers in that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I when I do safety talks, I talk about the I feel like the two things that are almost important to almost impossible to rescue are strainers and foot entrapments. Like we have techniques for rescue, but prevention is the key. Like once you get stuck in a tree or a foot entrapment, maybe you can be rescued, but maybe not. So like prevention's huge. So yeah, you're right. Add strainers in there too. And then so that's like stage one. Stage two would be talking about those things you talked about, like how to rescue your do self-rescue, how to rescue other people. And in talking about self-rescue, like introduce some of these ladders, say, hey, maybe catboats are easy. Maybe you should catboat because it's easier, but like make the point that self-rescue is important, rescuing other people, and then boating as a team so that like boat spacing, boat order, so you can properly look out for each other if there's a swim. And then stage three would be, I think, throw bags and swimming rapids. And so introduce the idea of throw bags, but also like have people get in the water and swim rapids, which I think in my experience, if it's commercial guides and you ask them to swim rapids, no problem. Every time I ask private boaters to swim rapids, they are incredibly hesitant and don't want to do it. And just like force people, like you need to swim a rapid. Like if you want to call yourself a class three or four boater, I need to see you swim something. Maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but like I think that that would be like stage three, like in the water with throw bags and swimming.
Yeah, that's and where would you do flips somewhere? Where would you put
Flips.
flips?
Flips would be in the middle section. Yep, so in that self-rescue thing. Like reflip a boat. Yep.
Because I've seen that a lot too. They don't even want to do that. They don't even want to flip a boat over and get in the water, or get him to swim underneath the raft. It's just like, hey, swim underneath the raft once. So you've had that experience. Just have that experience in a controlled environment first. So the first time it happens, it's not in some crazy chaotic environment. You're like, okay, I've been here before. I know what to do.
And when we teach our classes, we make people flip a boat, and you're right, they're super hesitant. Some people are cool, let's do this, but some are hesitant. And it turns out when people go to flip their boat, they realize their boats are too heavy. Like they bring too many boxes with them or attach too many bags on, or they're if you're boating for the day, you just need a frame and oars and a boat. You don't need three dry bags, two dry boxes, and they learn that taking that stuff off really helps. So yeah, flipping a boat would be is huge too.
Yeah, totally.
So what do you think?
It sounds like a really fun class, actually. I mean, it sounds incredible. Now, this is basically for a inflatable boat course, right? And
I think
so
this
a kayak course.
way different. And I feel like I love kayaking. I think I'm pretty good at it. I don't think I'm qualified to teach a kayak safety class, personally. And I kayak more than I raft, but I feel like I have more expertise in rafting. So I feel very comfortable coming up with the curriculum and teaching the rafting version, but kayaking, I don't think that's my cup of tea.
No, I feel kind of the same as you do about that. Like the rafting is like, but I think having been a commercial guide for so long, you've
worked through it so many times that your knowledge base is much better.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you've kayaked, you know, a lot too, so you know a lot about kayaking, but I've never really mastered, like, rescuing kayaks out of the water. That's not a skill, like, I feel like I'm a master. Like, I've seen enough raft flips, and I've just dealt with enough situations where I feel super comfortable. But when somebody swims and their kayak goes off, I've never really mastered pulling that boat to shore. And I feel like there's people who, like, I've been kayak instructors or kayak guides who have done it every day, all day for, like, 5 summers. And they can – they have an expertise there that I think is be better for hardshell kayakers.
Oh, totally. Zach, they talk about just getting back in the boat in the middle of the river. Like, flipping the boat back over, having them climb back in the middle. I'm like, wait, they like, get the water out somehow in the front of their boat, flip it over, get them to climb back in. They're like, yeah, we didn't even take them to shore. I'm like, wait, what? How? Yeah. No, there's like you said, like, I feel like I'm a private kayaker. I could use this course for kayaking.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. To like, you know, to round out my skills a little better. Like, I think I'm pretty safe out there, but I bet there's a bunch of good stuff I could learn. Like, I would love to take a kayak safety course like this, mm-hmm. where just to make sure I do have, like, the latest and the, you know, the latest preferred techniques for rescue. And there isn't some gaping holes that I don't know about because I have never taken a class like this.
Yeah, and I would love to go chase down kayaks and practice, actually, because I know I'm terrible at it. I missed one this year where I probably could have got it over sooner. I don't know. I let the kayak go because I'm like, this is just gear. Like, whatever. I don't want to get hurt chasing gear down. And it went a ways, you know, and it kind of made our day longer. And so I wish I was better practiced at that personally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. And there's certain places where it matters. Like, you know, in certain canyons, like, the kayak disappearing can make things dangerous. So
Yeah. Well, thanks for fleshing this through with me. I've definitely taken some notes. And this is something, like I said, I want to offer something like this, I think, at some point. But, man, what I'd rather have is see a lot of people offer this class, you know, it all over the place so that it's available. So this education's available. I think it's more important than swiftwater rescue, again, which kind of goes into the weeds.
I think like how to get someone out of a foot entrapment.
Yeah.
Is like, wow. Like that technique, the techniques they talk about for that, like that's a whole, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the time spent on that, there's a lot of other low hanging fruit where you can make people a lot safer on the river.
I think that's the way to put it. This is the low hanging fruit. Like the stuff we just talked about is the low hanging fruit for safety. I think that's a great description.
Because, like, pretty much everything we've discussed in there is stuff that we've done on commercial trips.
Yeah.
How many times have we rescued somebody who's had a foot entrapment? You know? I have yet to do that, thank goodness.
It's zero for me. I haven't done it either. I'm sure it may happen someday, and I'll be glad I've practiced something. But I think the average person who boats 8 times a year... the likelihood of them seeing a foot entrapment is really low, where the likelihood of a friend falling out in cold water, you know, is very high, and more dangerous than people think. Like you avoid the foot entrapment by getting them in early, versus letting them swim for half a mile. You know, if you're good at getting people back in a boat, or you can self rescue if you're the one that fell out, that's how you avoid that foot entrapment, is by quickly getting back in the boat.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's been a fun conversation.
Yeah. Well, do you want to move on to gear of the week?
Yeah, you bet. Sure.
I'll go first. Mine's pretty easy. I just got the American Whitewater Calendar for 2020. And I'm proud because one of my photos of Little Greenwall is in there. And so I'm going to encourage you all to get it because it supports American Whitewater. And so you can see my photo that I'm really proud of. So just go to AmericanWhitewater.org to get the 2020 American Whitewater calendar.
Sounds great.
What do you got, Aaron?
So my gear of the week is that Jack's Plastic makes these bags out of the Jack's Plastic. Have you used those ever? There's those waterproof bags, and they're phenomenal. I use them for everything.
Which ones, dry bags or the little like grocery
bags?
It's
like a dry bag, but it's open on one end with just a shoulder strap. So you can just throw stuff in them. Like they're like a big shopping bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's my all-time favorite piece of gear now. Like I got one for work a few years ago. We were expected to have them, and now I use it for everything. Like I use it when I go to store, go shopping. You got nasty meat, throw it in there. I know it's not going to make a mess in the car. Got wet gear after a day of surfing or boating. Throw all my wet gear in there, and it doesn't leak all over the place. I mean, it's just great for everything. Keep sand out. If you go put it down in the sand, you know, there's no sand getting in it. Yeah, they're one of my favorite pieces of gear.
Yeah, Jax Plastic is awesome. My friend Aaron last week, he had a Jax Plastic laptop case that was pretty cool. So, like, you know, like a little, like, over-the-shoulder day bag that I think they're making now, too.
Oh, wow.
So that's worth checking out. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, well, Aaron, thanks again for joining me. And have a good Christmas. And
thanks. You too, Zach.
Look forward to talking to you in the new year.
All right. Cool. Take care. Gonna float me into a new state.